Hello, and welcome to the Haaretz podcast. I'm Allison Kaplan-Summer in Tel Aviv. Worries over a full-scale war in the north with Hezbollah has been dominating the headlines and the psyches of Israelis in recent days. How likely is it to happen? What are the factors that will determine whether we continue in this persistent war of attrition in the north or move to a doomsday scenario of full-scale conflict where Iranian missiles rain down on Israel and the home front across the country is left without electricity or water? My guest on the podcast to discuss this disturbing topic is Yoram Schweitzer, a terrorism and conflict expert who has written extensively on Hezbollah. In our conversation, he analyzes the crisis on the northern border and how it is tied to resolving the conflict with Hamas in Gaza, to Netanyahu's worsening relationship with the Biden White House, and to the fate of the Israeli hostages. All that coming up. Yoram Schweitzer is an expert on international terrorism and a senior researcher at the Institute for National Security Studies, that following a career in Israeli intelligence and academia. He has served as a consultant on counter-terror strategies at the Prime Minister's Office and in the Ministry of Defense. He's been the head of the counter-international terror section of the IDF, and he was part of a task force dealing with Israeli soldiers missing in action at the Prime Minister's Office. Yoram Schweitzer, welcome to the Haaretz podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yoram, we speak at a time when thousands of Israelis are living as refugees in their own country, residents of our northern border, watching from far away as their homes are being damaged by rocket fire, deteriorating from months of neglect. And we see the attacks from Hezbollah becoming more daring, moving gradually further south. Meanwhile, the center of the country, I would say, is in a low-key panic mode, buying generators, transistor radios, expecting that at any moment this low-scale conflict, this war of attrition, will flare up into a full-scale war and Hezbollah will knock out our electric grid. To what extent do you see this as a panic or a realistic expectation based on Hezbollah behavior that this true full-out war is around the corner?
Panic is not necessary. It's not helping. And I don't think it has tangible, factual backing to this situation, although we all know that we are in a dire strait and in a strategic blunder. And I think that if and when our government will behave in a more rational and strategic way, then we can hope to extricate ourselves from this blunder.
Okay, your answer to my question begs, what would be a rational and strategic way to respond, and in what way is our government not following a rational and strategic path?
They have their own logic, but I think that because we were lured by the surprise attack of Hamas into this trap in the south, I think that it's obvious that we need to extricate ourselves from this ongoing war in the south. I think we essentially, basically we did it a few months ago, I think we exhausted the possibilities there, all this illusion of a total victory which was misguiding Israeli policy because of, I think, known reasons, made us go deeper and deeper in the north. And I think it's in our hands to determine the future in the north concerning a possible deterioration to a war, a global war, because a total war, because we are in a war of attrition now in the north. And I think Israel has a great and significant role to play in calming down the situation.
So you've written in the past, towards the beginning of the war, that what Hezbollah was doing on our northern border was a form of Palestinian solidarity. Let's keep the Israelis distracted and move their attention to the north so that they're busy on two fronts while they're waging this war against Hamas in Gaza. Looking back over the 8 months, do you see how that has changed and evolved? Do you think that it has different goals now? I mean, it's your job to understand what Hezbollah, what Nasrallah is thinking. How do you see their behavior in response to our behavior, of course, but mostly their initiatives as having evolved over the past 8 months of war since October 7th?
I don't think that Nasrallah is operating on behalf of the Palestinian interests. he is operating on behalf of his own interest, of the interest of Iran, the interest of the Axis, which the Palestinians are part of, and he wants to lure, totally lure Hamas into this Axis, Shiite Axis front, in order to have this additional component of Hamas totally adhering to this enlarged front of the Axis. Meaning that Nasrallah is advocating his own strategic interest to be the spearhead of the Axis of Resistance on behalf of Hezbollah's own interest in Iran. And of course, the component of the Palestinian is also part of it, but is not the leading part of it. It seems so, but the interest of Hezbollah, these are the ones who determine Nasrallah's insistence and persistence on continuing the war of attrition. I think the interest of Iran and Hezbollah evolved during the process. They, at first, they wanted to attire Israel in order to finish, to complete the Israeli attack, as they see it, on Hamas, in order to help Hamas to survive. Now, when the prolonging of the war changed their policy into a war of attrition, both by the Hamas and Hezbollah, and I think that's why they insist on gluing the northern front to the southern one. That's the logic of him.
And did we step into their trap? Are we playing by their rules? Are we doing what they want us to do?
Not entirely, because we were attacked and we needed to retaliate strongly with the iron fist to the problem in the south. I think we did so, but we have exhausted it after 3 months, more or less, or maybe more. But I think we should disengage from the south, meaning probably by kind of a deal with Hamas, and suffice with the achievements that we had, and we have quite many achievements in the war in the south. We don't need more. Of course, we can go all the way and to eliminate Hamas as if they were Nazis, but we need to have much more sober and strategic thinking, looking in the whole picture and trying to take into consideration our losses, quote unquote, although we defeated Hamas, not entirely, but we defeated Hamas. I don't think that the Israeli public is aware of what is going on in Gaza, how Gaza is destroyed. And I don't think that we are aware in the public domain on the destruction in Lebanon. I don't think we appreciate it that much. It's not seen clearly by the Israeli society. And I think we need to try to extricate ourselves from this blunder and to go for a more strategic thinking, going for the American bargain, going for the Saudi option, and trying to rethink and redesign and establish our own security preparedness in both the south, which was beaten, I mean in Gaza and Hamas, and towards the north.
As someone who has worked on a special task force for the Prime Minister's Office on soldiers missing in action, you don't think that any kind of resolution of the war in the south without our hostages returning is essentially an abandonment of them? Because that is what I see as the biggest obstacle, not necessarily to the government, but to the Israeli public in, you know, coming to some sort of terms and agreement in the south without a full hostage return. Is that just realistic? Do we have to write off the hostages if we want to resolve this conflict in the south?
On the contrary, what I mean, for me, having the deal, the bargain, the worst of the worst deal that we have in the south because of the situation we were dragged into, we need to solve this by bargain, by hostage exchange for the prisoners. I think we could withstand it, although it would be a devastating scenery and may have some negative repercussions, but we need to close this by making this deal first, by that extricating and stopping, halting the war in the south and extricating the war of attrition in the north, and then redesigning our preparedness and our military readiness both in the south and in the north, and preparing for a potential future war with Hezbollah if needed. And we also have other options to go for the political settlement.
I mean, you've said that for a while in your writing, that take a pause, make a resolution, and then get ready for the big conflict, which I imagine you think should be on our timing, on our terms, not a reactive situation. Because until now, it just seems like we've been completely reactive, that they attack, we react. And so your thinking is very different, right?
I don't know if it's different. I think we need to stop this being dragged into this quagmire. I know that there are prices for this. I know that in any case, Hezbollah and Iran and Hamas will declare that they are victorious. So it doesn't matter if we do it or not. And about the deterrence, I think that Hezbollah and, of course, Hamas felt very heavily the results of the Israeli quote-unquote weakness, because we were hitting both of them. And with Hamas, we destroyed most of its power, military power and governmental power. With Hezbollah, I think they feel very well, and they are very much aware of the destruction that Israel bestowed on them. And I don't think that beside the bragging and all these bravado of Nasrallah and his cohorts, they misunderstood the Israeli strength. Of course, they have other considerations and other calculations that forced them, imposed on them, to continue with this war of attrition.
In connection with all of the sort of panicked reports coming in the Israeli media from Lebanon, there are stories in the past few days of massive amounts of weaponry and missiles coming into Beirut International Airport. We're hearing that the Lebanese are getting very nervous about that, recalling the huge explosion that happened in the port that affected the civilian population. Does Hezbollah have the entire country of Lebanon hostage? Is there any way that there's diplomatic or military pressure that can be put on Lebanon that could deter Hezbollah, or are they just in charge of what happens?
I think we have to be more nuanced while looking at Hezbollah. There is no power and force, political force in Lebanon, that can impose on Hezbollah to give up its arms or to release their hostage taking of the Lebanese foreign policy and military policy. There is no force in Lebanon to do it. But Hezbollah is not indifferent to the voices in Lebanon, and he is under pressure. There are quite many vocal voices in Lebanon that resent Hezbollah's risky political behavior or military behavior. But again, they don't have the force to impose on them. So I think Hezbollah itself, under his own consideration, will accept a ceasefire, as they declared. I think they don't want war, and we have to be prudent to find out if we are right about it. They don't want to initiate war. And again, we have to be prudent in watching this assumption very closely. But on the other hand, it's their own interest to stick to their policy and to the war of attrition. I think that we need to understand in Israel that Israel is the one who determines the scale and the height of the flames of the war. I'm not accusing Israel. I am on the side of Israel. But I think we need to understand that Israel is the one that determines the scale of the belligerence in Lebanon.
By deciding what its targets are there? By how it behaves militarily?
I think that Hezbollah is reactive, mostly reactive to Israeli maneuvers, attacks, distance of attacks, quality of attacks, and it is reacting. I think the principle of Hezbollah is to prevent Israel from breaking what it sees as an equation of deterrence or equation of power or balance of power. This is the logic of Hezbollah's retaliation and reprisal towards Israel. It's not that Hezbollah is an innocent bystander. He started the war. Israel didn't take Lebanon. We need to be very attentive to what I'm saying in here. But I think that Israel is the one that can determine where the trend in Lebanon is going towards.
Rewinding a year ago, I looked at something that you wrote in July of 2023, and you were concerned that these terror groups that you study, Hamas, Hezbollah, were watching what was going on inside Israel, the divisions, the involvement of the military in the protests against the judicial coup, and you were linking their emboldened behavior on the border in the South to what you saw as their observation of us becoming weaker and weaker. There have been a lot of discussions from the right and from the left as to the connection of what's going on internally in Israeli society, how closely our terrorist group enemies are watching it, and whether what we're going through now is a reaction or not a reaction to that this particular time. It's all, I know, in hindsight, but do you see as a link between how much bolder they've become and the weakness that perhaps they perceive inside our country?
I don't think that there is a question that it's part of their considerations and calculations, but I'm not sure that this is the major one. For example, I think much more encouraging for them is the friction between Israel and the United States, in spite of the fact that they were deterred by the alignment of the United States towards Israel. And now when Israel is weaker and the prime minister is continuing with the frictions with the American administration, for Hezbollah is much more encouraging factor than the situation in Israel. Although, in the principal perception of Nasrallah, and by the way of Sanwars, the Israeli spider web doctrine of theirs is also part of their consideration, and they want to suck the air.
Explain the spider web doctrine to those of us who don't know about it.
First of all, both. Nasrallah was the one who started it, and it was echoed by Sinwar about a year and a half ago, that Israel is like a spider web, meaning that it's a very feeble society, uncohesive, that is going to crack and collapse under the pressure, the internal pressure of Israel, that when external pressure is exerted on Israel, Israel will collapse. That's their hopes, that's their dreams. I think they are badly mistaken, although we see the Israeli split. I think it's part of our strength, in spite of the appearance of weakness. Mm-hmm. I think the core of the Israeli society is much stronger than Nasrallah and Sinwar are hoping for, but I think we need to have much more strategic, sober, responsible, not only thinking, but also behavior on the Israeli part.
And we're not seeing that.
Not yet.
I was going to ask you about what's happening right now, the crisis between the United States and Israel, the public accusations by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu complaining about the amount and the pace of arms supply and support from the United States. It's obviously politically motivated, but how much of a shooting ourselves in the foot are we doing here by attacking our most powerful ally?
It's not only discreditude in the highest magnitude, but it's also a very stupid and foolish and irresponsible policy. It is definitely a strategic mistake by our prime minister that is going and attacking time after time the American administration, maybe one of the most friendly administration that Israel have enjoyed through the years. And I think it's, I don't want to use foul language, but it's definitely unrealistic, irresponsible policy that you are attacking your ally, the only ally or the most significant ally of Israel, as much as finance support is concerned, as much as military support is concerned, as much as a political and diplomatic support is concerned. And I think these provocations are entirely subjected to internal political calculations of the prime minister. And I think it is very dangerous for the Israeli stance in the region vis-a-vis Hezbollah, Iran, and Hamas.
We know that Netanyahu has these political considerations internally in Israel, but it also seems that he's essentially on the eve of the first debate between President Joe Biden and Donald Trump, presuming that it goes forward, which it is scheduled to do. Perhaps his rationale is that Israel will be better off under Donald Trump, and therefore that's why he's provoking the Biden White House at this time.
I don't want to get into the psyche of Prime Minister Netanyahu. I'm just watching the strategic damages that this gambling of a future possible administration, and in any case, Israel, that enjoyed the support of both parties, a bipartisan support of Israel, is being in danger of alienating our most significant ally, and gambling is not part of a policy, a rational policy of a statesman.
Coming back to our region for a moment and back to our discussion about Hezbollah and Iran, we see these proxies, the Hamas, Hezbollah, to the Houthis, who are, you know, more distant but also factor, and especially Hezbollah, because we're focused on the north right now. How much agency do they have? How much are they taking marching orders from Tehran, and are all of these big decisions taking place in Tehran? And how much are these groups taking their decisions on their own? I remember at the beginning of the war delving quite thoroughly into the question of whether October 7th was done on the initiative of Iran with the knowledge of Iran, or that they were completely ignorant what was happening. What's the dynamic between the terrorist proxies and the Iranian government?
We need to understand one thing which is almost guaranteed. If we have a war, if we will have a war with Hezbollah in future, it won't be a duel. It will be a fight against the entire, what they call the axis of resistance, including the Houthis from Yemen, Iraqi militias, Syrian militias, and maybe others who will join by this critical war between Israel and the Muslim Shiite-oriented axis. So if one looks at a confrontation, direct confrontation, a whole war confrontation with Hezbollah, it will be with the whole axis. This is also one thing why not to rush, in spite of our urge to destroy and demolish Hezbollah totally. I think we need to take it into consideration. And by that confrontation, we need to prepare properly. You don't do a war by the way. You have to prepare for such a war, and you need allies, especially the United States. So if the United States, because of its own consideration, doesn't have an interest or have an opposite interest not to have a regional war, you have to be very attentive to this and behave accordingly. Not because we are a vassal state, because we are subjugated to the United States global interest, but also it is a global vested interest, inherent and national interest of Israel.
The pressure on the other side domestically is the fact that we have these thousands of displaced people from cities like Metula, from Kiryat Shmona, real towns, real cities, indefinitely. Refugee cities may never return or may never come back. That's where the urgency comes to not sit and like carefully plan and strategize as to when to attack. These are the people saying, what about us now? You know, our lives are happening now. Our lives have fallen apart now. Do you think it was a mistake to evacuate these towns and cities and settlements just after October 7th? What do you see, given that you support some sort of a patient watch and wait strategy? What does Israel do with the fact that that it has so many of its citizens and so much of its territories basically a no man's land as this war of attrition continues?
First of all, it's not wait and sit and wait and see. You have to reorganize, replenish, re-prepare, consolidate your forces, army, etc., in the north and in the south. Prepare yourself for a new situation. That's very active policy. It doesn't support immediate rampage on Hezbollah and Lebanon, because this is not the way to extricate ourselves from the situation. I fully identify with the people in the north and in the south. And if we have a war with Hezbollah and with the Axis, everybody in the center, nobody can escape from the results of this. So we don't rush into it. If we will be forced to do it, we should do it. The time and the pace and the starting of this war is better to be in the Israeli decision and the Israeli upper hand and the first initiative of this kind of war. That's first. Second, I think that we need to acknowledge that we have a war in the north. And I think that we need to bring back the inhabitants of the north and the south. I believe that they will. I think we need to prepare and to designate a security strategy to defend them and to bring back the sense of security. This is something that if we don't do, we are doomed. So this is part of the rearrangement and preparedness of the Israeli next and future strategy. I think we need to regain the sense of security, not only the security. Security is the most important part, but the sense of security is also very significant part. So this is why we obliged not to rush into hasty emotional decisions in the north and also in the south.
We spent most of our time talking about the north, but just to go back to Gaza for a moment and to Hamas for a moment, because again, you specialize in studying Hamas. And we all see how devastated Gaza is. And we talk about the fact that we don't really have a policy as to an end game, as to how it's ended up. From Hamas's perspective, from their leader's perspective, did they see this, you know, if it were to end tomorrow, as a victory or as a defeat?
First of all, they will present it as a victory. I think when the dust will fade in 1 year and a half, I'm almost sure, because I'm talking about the future, I need to be very cautious, that they will have more rethinking about the results of the attack. In spite of the sense of victory now, I must say that I'm among the few probably in Israel that believes and analyze that there will be a bargain. I think it's in the interest of Hamas. I think Sinwar, when he went out for this war, one of the major components of planning this attack was to release the prisoners of Hamas, which he is committed, personally committed, and committed himself verbally to the families and to the prisoners themselves. So I think it's a vested interest of Sinwar to have a deal that will release the prisoners. Of course, he wants to have it in his own conditions. And he is insisting on ending the war, ending the belligerence activity, getting guarantees. I think we can, under sophisticated terminology, under the auspices of the United States with Qatar and mainly Egypt, they can designate or design a situation where these interests of both sides, of the Israeli side and of Hamas side, to culminate the war with a bargain and making it happen is something that is common. So I think, again, we talked about the Israeli internal political consideration of the political echelons. I think that eventually, even Israel and even the Israeli prime minister will go, in spite of the notion, the public notion, will go towards this kind of a deal because of external pressure and maybe of internal pressure.
Yoram, you say you're a maverick, that you disagree with a lot of other strategic analysts on your assessment of the likelihood of a hostage deal, on the desire of Hamas to make a comprehensive deal in the near future involving the release of Palestinian prisoners. Tell me, on what basis you formed your opinions on the likelihood that a deal could be imminent, and why and how it could happen?
I think maverick is not the right word. I think that I have my understanding that basically Sinwar is interested and basically is obliged, almost obliged, to have this deal and release of the hostages, which he committed to them and to their families when he was released, that he will bring about their freedom. So it's a vested interest of Sinwar. Now, Sinwar is playing with this hostage card according to the circumstances. At first, it was one of his major initial incentive for going into this world. Not the only one. He had other considerations, but this was a significant one. Now he has the cards. He has the multiple versions of Israeli hostages, from women to children to elderly to soldiers and to female soldiers. So he needs to use this card in order to bring about a deal. Since he has other considerations now, which pushed aside temporarily his wishes to release and his commitment to release the prisoners, because he would not be able to confront the prisoners and the families of the prisoners if he is going out of this war without releasing the prisoners. So on this assumption, I think that we need to understand it and to act accordingly. Israel has also vested interest in this major value of releasing and commitment to Israeli citizens by the government, which is obliged to release the prisoners. So I think eventually we'll reach to a point when this deal is going to be executed. Now, I think that when Israel eventually, and the Prime Minister of Israel eventually will relinquish this total devotion to defeating Hamas to the last core and the last soldier, eventually we will do this deal. Now, we'd better do it as soon as possible. And I think that we need and we have the capabilities with the support of the United States, with the pressure of the Egyptians and to some extent the Qataris with their own interests to bring about this kind of a deal which will extricate the cork of the South, which may lead Israel and the region into a regional war with global repercussions. This is the main component of the strategic situation that we are in. Now, it needs a decision of the Israeli Prime Minister to go for this war, to pay the heavy price, to have this bitter medicine swallowed by the Israelis. We will all suffer when we see the consequences, but this is a must. And I think eventually it will happen. I hope the sooner than later.
But by your logic, it could have happened months ago?
I think it would have been better for Israel to do it a long time ago and to continue the bargain that we had at the beginning of the war when we released the hostages. I think it's the interest and one of the reasons and the lessons of the Ron Arad case and others negotiations with terrorists concerning our prisoners is not to abandon any possibility for an earlier bargain.
So we talk about gambling. You're weighing that the external pressure of the world will affect Netanyahu more than the internal pressure coming from Smotrich and Ben-Gvir from his extreme right to prevent such a deal from happening?
Yes, I think that, first of all, the pressure by the United States and understanding that we are going into a regional war may influence Netanyahu in spite of his political pressures and considerations. Second, he may have some positive motivations, whether it's the Saudi angle that may
contribute. Which you believe is still alive, the Saudi deal.
Let's say that if I'm right, and there's going to be a bargain, not in 10 years, but in something like the near future, I'm not talking about weeks.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, we're talking about Saudi normalization and a comprehensive deal involving the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Israel would still be part of it.
Yes, it's. Yeah. Look, we need to go to a strategic alliance with our partners, to the more pragmatic camp vis-a-vis the axis of Iran and the others. That's a strategic thinking. So the bargain and the completion of the mission in the south to the last core of defeating the last terrorist is not an option, is not a determinant of a strategic policy. So we exhausted this, we can continue it forever, but we exhausted the advantages of the war in the south. We need to find some kind of arrangement with Egypt concerning the Philadelphia corridor, and we need to have a cessation of belligerent acts in the north, and then to go to the other strategic level and to try to make the best of this horrific events that happened on October the 7th and on.
So you believe that if the south is calmed down, the north will follow?
Sure.
Okay, I think that on that optimistic note, considering we're at such a difficult and stressful time, I'll decide to wrap things up. Yoram Schweitzer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing so much of your time.
Thank you.
And that wraps things up for the Haaretz podcast. Thanks to my guest, Yoram Schweitzer, and to my producer and editor, Nara Malkin. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. And if you're already subscribed, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating so more people can find us. And don't forget to subscribe to and read Haaretz.com for the latest news on Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. I'm Allison Kaplan-Summer. Until next week, shalom from Tel Aviv.